forward in his 21st season.
And welcome to Courtside Mavs, everybody. How is everybody doing? I'm here with my boy Murphy. How are we doing after that nice 2W West Coast mini road trip?
Man, I can tell you one thing, Logan. I am feeling incredible. It's been a while since the Mavs have had a dominant stretch, even though, you know, it's only two games, but it definitely feels nice to win a couple, you know, back-to-back in which we've had struggles recently. So I'm feeling good. I know the Courtside Mavs listeners are feeling good. And we have a lot to unravel with these two games that happened the last two nights.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot to break down. We're going to focus more on the Sacramento game because that's what's on the top of our minds, the Golden State game. I mean, that was pretty much just the Mavs went in there and just kind of just kicked their ass. And that was pretty much that. Not much to go into. But, Murphy, I want to talk to you. I want to get your thoughts first. What do you think was the most impressive thing out of the Sacramento game for you?
Sacramento game, I'd say the consistency. Because Sacramento, they're a team that has a lot of guys that can get hot quickly and a lot of guys that you feel like shouldn't be killing you, but then they end up killing you. Guys like we've seen Harrison Barnes go off like that many times. We usually see him as a more consistent player, but feels like he always plays a little better against us ever since we traded him. But guys like Buddy Hield, who can catch fire in an instant or who can also have an incredibly cold game, I feel like those type of guys played pretty well. Buddy hits in threes. Harrison Barnes was scoring pretty well, but the defense that allowed the other guys not to explode, you know, Corey Joseph's another guy that can put up big numbers if allowed. And Bagley, you can tell that he knows where he was drafted, and he knows that other people talk about it all the time, talk about the impact that he's had on his team compared to what Luke has done for his team so far. You know that's on his mind, and I feel like that's hindering him a little bit in his growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And Buddy Hield is known to be a Mavs killer. I mean, it's always been like that. Whenever we've played Buddy Hield, it's just felt like he always goes for like 40 on us. So I got some stats here from the game that this me talking about Sacramento stats, but if you just read the stats, Dallas did a pretty good job and on defense. Harrison Barnes had 25 points, but he didn't really get any assists or anything. Harrison Barnes shot 43%. So not terrible, but I mean, most of his points was just easy post-ups, but when we needed to get stops, we got stops. De'Aaron Fox had a good game. Fox is a good player.
Fox is a very solid player. Seeing him play like that is nothing out of the ordinary for me.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the Bagley to Luka comparison? Because, you know, when that draft was going on, pretty much everybody, all the media, all the fans were saying, the Suns, they got to pick Ayton. You know, they have a gaping hole in their team. They need a big man. Ayton's huge. He's got a body like David Robinson. Right. He can dominate in the NBA, it's a no-brainer you take him because he was a much safer pick than Luka. Now, the second pick, the Kings, they got a lot of gaping holes. It's not just one position for a team like Sacramento. So choosing a guy like Bagley over a guy like Luka, I mean, Bagley so far this season, now, granted, he's been hurt a little bit. He hasn't played every game, but this season he's got a total of 7 assists, and Luka had 17 assists that game alone. So that just kind of goes to show you the difference between those two type of guys and how one draft pick can really make all the difference.
I might just
But last night, I don't know what the weather's like. It was the halfway point of the season.
So
you look at the numbers, and if you look at pace, which I know you don't really want to look into that because a lot of things can change that, you know, performance and injuries and things of that nature. But if we keep pace the way we are right now, even after the cold stretch we've had recently, we'd be a 52-win team. And 52 wins, you know, compared to the way we've been playing the last few seasons, I mean, it feels great, obviously, but you think of the great Mavs teams in the past, you know, the 67-win team in 2007, teams like that, you say, 52 wins, that's solid, but in the tough Western Conference, I don't know. Well, if you think about it, the last time we won 52 games was 2011.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this year for the Mavs is really just about getting experience. Our season this year is more of like, I want it to be kind of like what Denver did last year. I hope it doesn't end the same tragic way that Denver season did, but Denver's last year was the learn how to win development year, and now this year they're doing really good. So I think that's more of the track we're going in. Even in that Sacramento game, one of the things that stood out to me, I mean, we got to talk about Luka's stat line. Only six players in NBA history have had 20 points, 15 rebounds, 15 assists. And do you want to take a guess at who those players are, those six players?
Is one of them Magic?
It would be Magic is one of them, yes, correct.
LeBron, I'm going to guess.
LeBron is not one of them.
Interesting. Oscar, I'm going to say.
Oscar had like 20 of them, yes.
He makes. Of course, I think. That's tough.
There's one other player that's done it in like recent years. Two.
Westbrook?
No. The other two that have done it closer to Luka now, the seventh person to do it, but we had Nikola Jokic and Harden have gotten 20 and 15 and 15. Harden shot, like, had 53 points, 17 assists, 15 rebounds on, like, a 53% shooting night. And then I think the other one was Magic and now Luka. So that he's in that was just an incredible stat line for Luka. And Luka to me, he has the best field goal percentage when driving into the paint in the whole league. He has the best shooting percentage in the league. It's like 70% in the paint, and Luka's having a little bit of a rough spell on his 3-point shooting. He hasn't been really good lately. Luka's really a streaky shooter, and I think he'll get better as his career goes on. But I would like just to see him drive more like he did last night, which is three's not falling, but he can get to the rim so effortlessly, and he draws people in so he can kick it out. And the one thing I was noticing last night is the players were actually making the shots when Luka would hit the players. Yep. In those passes to the corners, or just in general, the guys were making them. And Luke, I don't expect him to make like as many shots consistently as he did last night, but if they can even do half of what they did last night, Luka could easily average 13, 14 assists a game off of players.
Nah, you feel so good when he's knocking, and his teammates are knocking down those shots. It feels so good to watch a team like that, watch the offense flow, because when he knows that those guys are going to be knocking down those corner threes and those wing threes, it opens up so many more opportunities, and he's able to make incredible plays like that one full court pass that he made last night when he was on, I believe, the right side of the floor, and he was double teamed to swing past the Finney Smith in the corner, knock down three in front of the Kings bench. That is allowed to happen because guys like Finney Smith and Kleba, and Hardaway Jr. are knocking down essentially every open three they find.
Yeah, that was one of the best passes I've ever seen. Like, and there's only two other players in the league that can make that pass, and that's Ben Simmons and Bron. Those are the only two players I can think of that can make. The way that, because the Luka's height 6'7", the reason he can make these crazy passes because he can see over people, so he can see over the dude. So then he throws like a hook pass, and it drops down to Dorian Finney-Smith. Like there's like the ball doesn't weigh anything. It flutters there perfectly, perfect touch, and he drains the three. And the one thing that's very underrated about the Mavs is you got to give credit to their developmental team, and they've taken undrafted free agents like Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxey, and they've made them into great players. I mean, imagine it if Maxey was going to be a free agent this year. You know how much money he could get paid by like a team with a lot of cap space. I'm so glad that we paid Maxey last year. He's only making $8 million a year. If Maxey would have had this good of a season and went to free agency this offseason, he would have easily gotten 14, 15.
Oh, for sure. And I see interview after interview where Cuban is just praising the training staff and all the coaches. Sham God in particular, he talks about that man more than anybody, I think. And that goes to show you the kind of people that the Mavs look for. I mean, it's not just players. Like, we don't just worry about finding deep talent in players across the country like we did when we went to Germany to look at Dirk back in the day, or flew out to Slovenia apparently when Luka was 13 to check him out. But it's a talent across the board, you know, with the coaching staff and the trainers. I think Casey Smith might be the best trainer in all of basketball. But the Mavericks just do such an incredible job of finding these talented people across the world. And I think it just goes to show just kind of the nature of the organization and how it's run. I think it's pretty incredible the way Cuban does it.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible how good the training staff is, and I can't praise them enough. I mean, I don't completely give them credit for Dirk, because Dirk was just, he had some godlike healing powers to play through the flu in the finals, to He had a bad injury that he probably could have played through in the Spurs, but the team made sure he didn't play that, and we probably could have gotten to the finals that year. But, you know, but Luka seems to be one of those players. He has that just weird ability just to be able to play through injury and play hurt or sick. But, and there was a thing last night, I said on my Twitter account, but not just me, it was I think All Day Mavs tweeted this and Mavs Highlights tweeted this. Luka had bruises and scrapes all up his arms.
Oh, yeah, what was that about?
And it's a shame to me that he hasn't gained. If Harden's going to get 25 to 30 free throws a game, Luka barely gets half of that and probably gets hit harder than Harden does. And it's ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, you mentioned this earlier that even with regards to that, Luka's still got the highest field goal percentage in the paint in the entire league. And that's incredible. Considering the amount of times that he gets hacked and there's no call and he's forced to chunk up some crazy miss and throw his arms in the air. But the fact that he's still able to make them at such a high rate, even when he's getting fouled, I bet there's a lot. You can tell by his reactions, there's a lot of times where he feels like he gets fouled, makes a shot anyways, and there's no whistle.
Oh, yeah, tons of times. And Luka has become like a lot. Like two players I compared to this was a great comparison to Luka is Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford was one of the best players ever at getting fouled and making jump shots. Luka just is, I don't know if he's just strong or how he does it. Luka just has an art of getting fouled in the mid-range area and being able to hit those floaters, getting fouled, or even just get fouled and throw up jump shots, and he'll make them.
He did that last night against Sacramento. He had that one from the free throw line. He did that
twice. And Luka just has, he stole this move from Chris Paul, because Chris Paul used to do it all the time. Well, he'll come off a screen and he'll get the defender on his back, but instead of going to the basket, he'll get low in a stance and he'll box the guy out behind him, and then he'll just bait him into a foul, or he'll just do it. He basically can either take a floater or make a pass. The defense has to decide what they want to do.
And a move like that takes so much control. It's amazing that a guy like him at 20 has already mastered a move that took Chris Paul years to work on master.
Yes, and before one thing, I gotta say the Sacramento game. Let's give a big shout out to Dwight Powell. Dwight Powell, last two games, 48 for 50 for 57 field goal percentage. I mean, we gotta give the only credit I'm gonna give here. I'm gonna give big credit to Mavs Twitter for bullying Dwight Powell into becoming an okay player again.
It worked, guys.
Congratulations. We did the same thing with Tim Hardaway Jr. We bullied Tim Hardaway Jr. into a consistent player. And
now Luka, next we got to worry about Luka's free throws now, right? That's what we got to bully him into?
He shot pretty good free throws against Sacramento.
You're right. I think we bullied him enough after the Warriors game.
Yeah. But Dwight Powell, now the criticism for Dwight Powell, it gets a little bit overboard, but my thing with Dwight Powell is he's good at what he does. He's good at rolling and scoring and dunking. The reason that I'm not a fan of Dwight Powell is just for the defensive side, because Dwight Powell just gets bullied in the paint, and it's not be entirely Dwight Powell's fault, because the team doesn't really put him in an ideal situation to help him. They play him half the time. They have him guarding the five, which makes no sense, but yeah, it's kind of a thing. But Dwight Powell, the last few games, you got to give credit where credit's due. He's played great. And also, Tim Hardaway Jr. has come into his own, and he's been reminding me a lot of Jason Terry. He's coming off these ball screens, and he's hitting these threes now consistently, where earlier in the year he was kind of a streaky shooter, but he seems to be finding his consistency a bit.
Yes, he has. It's nice to see that. And it's especially nice to see. I mean, I saw some tweets today about the three-point percentages across the board from the guys in the Mavs this year compared to last year. I think Tim's up from about 32 to 38%, which is a huge jump. Dorian, I think, had a 4 or 5 point jump as well. And Maxey went from about 35 to 40. And those kind of improvements can really make or break a team. I think people say Porzingis is the reason that this team is so different from last year. And he is, don't get me wrong, but it's guys like that taking the next step that really send the Mavs into contention, hopefully.
Yes. And speaking of Kristaps Porzingis, let's get into a little bit of the KP talk. So earlier in the day, we were hyped up by the Mavs Twitter account and much of the Mavs media, Brattausen, Tim Cato. They all said that Porzingis was expected to play. This was his goal on this road trip to play. That's what's been determined from whenever he has soreness. So quick note on the injury. I think this injury, they were very cautious about it. I think they more just said, okay, we're going to sit you. You're having a little bit of pain, so we're going to sit you for this amount of games, and we're going to have you come back this time, and we're going to see how you're doing. So KP was set to play tonight at about 8:40 Central Time. It was tweeted that KP is going to be in the starting lineup. And then and Carlisle said KP was going to play, he was going to start. And then around like right before the game started, like 10-15 minutes before tip, Tim Cato tweets out Kristaps Porzingis is a late scratch with knee soreness, and everyone was just confused again. And I don't think anyone should be concerned. I think once the Mavs, this is my hunch, but I think once the Mavs saw that Bogdanović was out for Sacramento, they're like, okay, they don't have their best player, so I don't think KP can maybe rest him for another day. But they said KP after the game did say he was fine, like, all these couple days doing these workouts, and they said, like, he had a little bit of soreness before the game, so they were probably just being, he said they're being very precautionary. But I'm expecting, I mean, I don't know what to expect at this point, but I would have to assume that KP is probably going to play tomorrow at Portland. So, yeah, what are your thoughts on this whole KP injury saga?
You know, if he doesn't play against Portland, that's when, all jokes aside, I am pressing the panic button on him, because this injury came out of nowhere, and it's sidelined him for so much longer than anybody could have expected. And the fact that he's been scheduled to come back a couple times and still hasn't come back either of those times, I mean, that worries me a lot. That makes me feel like this was a serious injury initially. They tried to downplay it a little bit, and they were going to let him work his way back without really worrying the fans or the media or anybody. But it's taking a turn for the worse. I mean, to be fair, I do think that he really did expect to play yesterday. I read something where he was actually extremely excited and hyped up about the game, getting back out there. And then last minute, the soreness returned. He wasn't able to take action, but if he doesn't play the Portland game, I'll be genuinely worried. Yeah,
I think this would be like, if this was the playoffs, he would be playing. I think the Mavs are just being very precautionary about this. And to the Mavs' credit, he didn't. I didn't think they needed him to play yesterday. It wasn't like the Sacramento's not a very good team. But I think the Mavs have been doing serviceable without KP. I think he needs to come back. But I don't think the Mavs are in any rush to rush him back. Even if the Mavs went 500 the rest of the way, they would make the playoffs still. So I don't think the Mavs are overly concerned about KP. So I think the Mavs should just take this slow. Make sure he's okay when he comes back, and just progress what it is. And the good thing is, I don't think it was any major or freak injury. I just think maybe it was a little bit of wear and tear or something. Maybe he just got, like, he just took a wrong step, and maybe he just had a little bit of pain. You know, it happens.
I believe that's probably what happened, yeah.
My thing was maybe he was on his knee that wasn't injured, maybe he was overcompensating to that knee because of his injury. So
Very likely. But luckily, we didn't need him for either of these games. We definitely didn't need him for the Warriors game, the Kings game. I thought we might need him for, but somehow pulled it out. But do you want to talk about that Warriors game a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Let's get into a little bit of the Warriors game. So the Warriors game, I thought was, I mean, it was pretty much just a full out just rolling of Golden State, 124-97. Luka really didn't have to play that much. This was a game where Luka didn't have to do too much. I didn't think he barely played. I think he only played about 20-25 minutes. But these are games that if the bench can get back to being consistent like they were towards the beginning of the year, especially during the playoffs, that'll be great for the Mavs. Because if Luka doesn't have to score 30 a game just for us to be close, I mean, that's great. If the bench can have some consistent scoring and doing good. And this was a Boban game. Boban is the definition of efficiency. He had 13 points, 11 rebounds in about 10 meaningful minutes, and then he played the garbage time minutes. But Boban...
That's a monster.
Yeah, I feel like Boban, while KP was out, I think they really should have been using him more just to have him in the paint, just as a presence there. I really think it would have helped a lot. But, you know, it is what it is. So hopefully KP comes back in a couple games and we'll be okay.
Yeah, having Boban out there, a lot of times he's so immobile that it feels like everything's so stagnant when he's out there. But the offense looked incredible, that Warriors game. I'm not sure if it's just because the Warriors are atrocious at defense or what.
Oh, no, the Warriors are atrocious at defense. So are the Kings. The Warriors and the Kings don't play any paint defense. They were just letting us walk in and have whatever we want in the paint. That's why Luka was able to drive so easily. I mean, my one moment from the Warriors game, I gotta say, was when Draymond Green was all up in Luka's face. He poked him, and then Luka was just so good on offense that he was able just to drive on Draymond Green, get the little floater, and he kind of taunted Draymond Green. And Luka's doing this to one of the best defenders in the league. So that's really all I was taking from the take. That's all I really took from the Warriors game. But you know, the Mavs.
You know, Draymond's always barking at people, so it was cool to see. I feel like whenever that moment happens, and Draymond and Luka have gone at it a few times, I feel like Luka always ends up winning those small little battles, and that's so nice to see, because Draymond's such a big trash talker, and he loves trying to rile people up and get under their skin. So whenever somebody can humble him a little bit, it makes you feel good, especially when it's a guy like Luka. But I was watching the Warriors broadcast for the game, and Bob Fitzgerald, the Warriors play-by-play guy, he gave a really interesting statistic about Luka. He said, apparently Luka has 12 more and ones this season than he has total shots blocked for the entire year, which is pretty crazy. The only player in the league with more is the former MVP, Giannis. So that goes to show you the kind of season that Luka's had as well. That's why guys like Draymond can't contain him, even though they're, you know, all NBA defenders and former Defensive Player of the Year guys. It's because Luka is that special.
I would also have to say Luka doesn't block many shots either, but, you know, I'm not going to roast Luka on the defensive end.
Not block shots, like 12 more and ones he has than his own shots have been blocked.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's why it's so crazy. Yeah, he doesn't block very many shots. I'll give you that. If that's where he thought I was going, then very unimpressive stats.
So I'll give you all a quick update of the NBA standings through about halfway through the season right now. Currently, as we're recording this, the Jazz and the Pelicans are in overtime with 55 seconds left. So,
whoa.
Speaking of the Jazz went on a massive win streak and are 28-12, tied for the second seed with Denver. So we have LA Lakers 33-8 with the one seed. Denver 28-12 is the second seed. Jazz tied for the second seed at 28-12. LA Clippers 28-13 as the 4th seed. Houston Rockets 26-14 as the 5th seed. Dallas Mavericks 26-15 as your 6th seed. The Oklahoma City Thunder 23-18. And your Memphis Grizzlies, led by Ja Morant, 19-22 and holding that last playoff spot. I mean, you got to give credit where credit's due. Ja Morant's having an outstanding season. I think he might sneak into the All-Star game. But
the All-Star game, I don't know. It's pretty stacked in the guard for the Western Conference, man.
It'll be hard, but I mean, he's in the top 10 right now, and I don't think, because half the fan vote is kind of skewed, because Alex Caruso is not going to make it, even though he's like 4 in the fan voting. The coaches have more respect than that. So,
but man, the Utah Jazz, 10 straight games. That is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and
do you think they're legit? Because I mean, I think the Lakers are legit. I think the Nuggets this year are actually legit. And the Clippers, and hopefully the Mavs, but you know, it's not going to hurt ourselves.
I think I gotta see consistently run from the Jazz, because there have been times this year where the Jazz have been inconsistent at the beginning of the year, and Mike Conley really wasn't playing that good. But the Jazz have had some easy games recently. This is weird. Cool. The Mavs haven't even played the Jazz yet. They will in this 10-game stretch at some point. They play the Jazz on the road. But I mean, I think the reason we haven't played them like any time this year is because last year we played them like 4 times in the first like 30 games. The West is just stacked. I think any team could beat any team in the West. I wouldn't be shocked.
But anyway, no, it's gonna be a good playoff this year. That's for sure. There's gonna be a lot of very interesting matchups. I'm hoping it stays the way it is now, with the Clippers are four and the Lakers are one, so they play each other in the second round. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. So some like underrated team could get into the conference finals.
Right.
Now, the bottom of the Western Conference looking like this. At the 9 seed, we have San Antonio at 17-22, Portland at 18-24, Phoenix at 17-24, Minnesota 15-25, New Orleans 15-26, Sacramento 15-26, and at the bottom of the Western Conference, we have the Golden State Warriors at 9-23. Now, let's give you to the Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee Bucks sitting in there at the number 1 seed at 37-6, holding the best record in the NBA right now. Two seed in the East, you got Miami Heat at 28-12. Third seed, we have the Boston Celtics at 27-13. Toronto 26-14 as the 4th seed. The Pacers 26-15 as the 5th seed. The Philadelphia 76ers 26-16 as the 6th seed. Orlando 20-21 as the 7. And Brooklyn 18-12 as your 8th seed. So the 1 through 6 in the East, that would be Bucks, Heat, Celtics, Raptors, Indiana, 76ers. I think any of those teams could make a run. There's a great shot. I think once Indiana, the Pacers get Victor Oladipo back, I think they have a real shot in the playoffs to upset a couple teams. Philly's been kind of iffy the last couple weeks, but then we go to the bottom of the Eastern Conference. You have your Bulls at 15-27 at your 9 seed, Detroit 15-27, Charlotte 15-29, Washington 13-27, Cleveland 12-29, and New York 11-31. And drumroll please, the worst team in the Eastern Conference, your Atlanta Hawks, led by the All-Star Trae Young, 9-32.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Hawks in a second, because they're atrocious. It's embarrassing to watch. But I'm going to say this about the Eastern Conference contenders, quote-unquote. I don't think the Sixers have any sort of chance. I don't think the Pacers really have a chance. And to be honest, the Heat, I know they're second seed right now, but you got to be a good road team if you're going to win any playoff series. And they have a losing record on the road. I don't think they really have a shot to be very competitive come playoff time. I think the Bucks, they're definitely going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll just see who they face. But that could be their downfall again. I want to see if they can get over that hump this year. I think the Celtics are pretty legit. You know, they've been making great runs the last few years, and they just never really materialized into a finals run. They almost got there that one year when Tatum dunked on LeBron. But I think they've actually got a serious shot to contend for a title this year.
Man,
but
the East
is so... That team's just not good enough. They don't have the right pieces fitting together. They have a lot of good pieces, but, I mean, a lot of good squares aren't going to fit into round holes, you know?
You know, the East is so weird to me because I feel like the Bucks are a lock for the Eastern Conference Finals depending on who they play. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Bucks got, like, knocked out by somebody because if they play Toronto again, Toronto could just do the same thing to Giannis last year. They took him away and made him shoot, and Toronto would be a dangerous team for the Bucks again because Toronto knows how to beat them.
I agree.
But
I think Toronto's a contender.
The Sixers have the talent to definitely make a run. They have a good player. They just got to get together a little bit. And I mean, the East to me is really all about matchups, because there's teams that match up well against other teams in the East, and there's teams that, like, match up really bad against other teams. So, you know, it's kind of weird because, you know, I feel like Milwaukee matches up pretty good with anyone, but Milwaukee, if they played Toronto, they could have some trouble there. And the East is really going to be about home court advantage. I mean, Miami's been an amazing home team, so if Miami has home court through the first two rounds, I feel like they would probably win the series. But if they had to go on the road more than they played at home, I don't think Miami would win. So, you know, the East is very interesting. But
all about matchups more than anything.
Yeah. The West is a toss-up because the West is just weird. I wouldn't be shocked if the Thunder upset the 2 seed in the first round. It wouldn't shock me.
I can see it for sure. Whoever the Thunder plays in for a run for their money, that's going to be a great series.
And you know,
but the Western Conference has so many good teams that I feel like any of those series is going to be a solid one. Even the Grizzlies series, just because there's going to be so much energy and so much hype around those guys.
The Grizzlies are playing good basketball right now, and if the West is, they're just so good, and still the NBA, it's still professional. But I think Denver is going to be a tough team to beat at home in the playoffs. So yeah, but let's shift from the standings talk a little bit. Let's hop into our you want to talk about the Hawks. What did you want to say about the Hawks before we move?
Well, I mean, obviously Trae Young's a great talent. He's going to be starting in the All-Star game, and I'm not sure if that's just for the hype around him or because he's actually solid, but he's putting up Luka-esque numbers this year, almost matching Luka, and Luka's numbers are historically impressive for a second-year guy.
And you feel bad for Trae Young because his team is not good. He does not have a good team whatsoever. That Hawks team is just – it's really just Trae Young and a bunch of yuck.
Yeah, when John Collins went out for that suspension, he hasn't quite been the same. And Jabari Parker stepped up a little bit, but, you know, he's Jabari Parker. How long is that really going to last? And that's already kind of faded out. Prayers up to Chandler Parsons, though. I heard he was in a car accident recently, so I hope he's all right for sure. One of my favorite guys that played for the Mavs, even though it didn't really end that well, but still got much love for the guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But let's move on for our sort of last little segment of the podcast today. Let's get into previewing the Portland game tomorrow. So why don't you go first on the Portland game? What do you expect tomorrow?
Well, I am really excited for this Portland game because it's been a while since we played Portland and they haven't been, you know, considered a powerhouse. I mean, they're still pretty solid. They've been playing not great basketball, but not terrible basketball. But, man, I'm a huge Carmelo Anthony fan, so I'm going to love seeing him versus Luka. They won't guard each other very often, but just the matchup, the hype around that. And every time we play Portland, it always seems to be an incredible game. We've had some insane finishes. We had the Yogi game a few years ago against Portland. This year, the game that came down to the coach's challenge, we've had that game a couple years ago where Dirk hit those back-to-back clutch threes and we still lost. So every Portland game is just incredible. So this one, I feel like it won't be any different. We had the Luka game last year. I mean, come on now. The buzzer beater.
That's one of the reasons I'm hoping I get to go to the Portland game tomorrow. It's still in the works, but who knows. But that's one of the reasons I wanted to go, because the Portland games are usually really exciting. They're nail-biters. I hope it's not. I'd rather just be a blowout and we just win.
Yeah. I was at the first Portland game this season with the coach's challenge, and Terry Stotts lost us the game. So I hope you have a little better luck than I had.
Yeah. But, you know, Portland, they've been a lot better since they added Carmelo Anthony. They've been playing better. Melo, honestly, he's accepted his role as playing that sort of like starter, but he's not trying to just be Knicks Carmelo Anthony and chuck up 30 shots a game. He's hitting the shots when they ask him to, and he's been pretty good for them. Carmelo's always been a good mid-range guy. He's gonna knock him down most of the time. And you know,
right? He's playing the exact role that they needed.
Portland could easily go on a run and get back into the playoff picture. I would not be shocked. But Portland, the problem this year with Portland, I felt like, is just CJ McCollum hasn't been as consistent as he's been in past years. And you know,
and they lost a lot of their wing depth. You know, they lost a lot of their strong wing defenders and Seth Curry. They lost Aminu, they lost Maurice Harkless as well. A lot of those guys were really big for them, and the reason they were so successful is because Dame and CJ were allowed to do their thing, because the other guys would do their duties on defense and rebounding and make sure that they got the ball and knock down a lot of open shots. So I think replacing those guys for guys like Bazemore and Mario Hezonja has really been hindering them. That's why Melo has helped them out so much, because he's a lot like that in the three aspects, not so much the D aspects, but losing those guys is one of the reasons I think they're lower in the standings than they have been the last few years.
Yeah. And, you know, Portland, I really feel like they're missing Nurkic a lot. He was their presence in the middle.
Sure. Whiteside is very on and off guy.
Yes, and Nurkic was their guy, and Nurkic really just hasn't been there for them to be that presence they need in the middle, and it showed, because Portland's defense this year really hasn't been as stout as it's been in past years. And look at Portland over the last few years, they've been a solid defensive team. They've been in the top 20 in defensive efficiency, and their field goal percentage in the paint last year was a lot, which they would give up field goals in the paint. This year they've been giving up tons of points in the paint, and if you watch it when the Mavs play Portland this year in the first game, I mean, we would score in the paint at will, and that's really beneficial to the Mavs, because when the Mavs can get those easy buckets, it just makes it easier for everybody.
Hey, we have some breaking news live on the Courtside Mavs show tonight.
Breaking news.
Well, not breaking, but we talked about it a little bit earlier about the Jazz game. Brandon Ingram, career high 49. The end of the Jazz's 10-game winning streak. How about that, huh?
Wow.
49 for Ingram, man. He is blossoming into something special.
He deserves to be an All-Star this year.
You think he's going to get it, though? There's a lot of players in the West.
I think he could squeak into one of the last spots. I think he deserves it.
He's definitely in the most improved conversation. That's for sure. I'm not so sure about
it. He'll definitely probably win MIP, without a doubt in my mind. I think he's the most improved player.
Luka has a chance as well in that category.
I think Luka's too good to win most improved player, because he'll probably be in the MVP voting.
Yeah, he is.
But you know, it's right. I think the Mavs are probably gonna. I don't know. Portland games are weird, but I hope KP plays. If KP doesn't play, you know, Portland's still a good enough team to score. I mean, the thing with the Mavs, I always say, is the Mavs, they're good enough to blow good teams out, but they're also good enough to where they'll let a bad team beat them, or they can just play bad. And if Portland, without KP right now, and without somebody in the paint, Portland could score in the paint at will sometimes if they want to. if we let them. So, you know,
they did that a little bit the earlier game this season that we played them in Dallas. They did a lot of, you know, quick dives to the paint, and once those started to get open, then Dame really found himself getting a lot of easy layups.
Yeah, my player to watch for the Portland game, we can each choose a player. I'm gonna go with Maxey. Maxey's been playing really good over this stretch of five or six games in KP's absence, and Maxey's 3-point shot has just been on point the last few games. He is doing it. He is saying, "Call me after those threes." And Maxey's been on fire, so I think Maxey's going to have a good game, and he's my player to watch. So who's your player to watch for him, the Portland game?
You know, I hope it's Maxey, because Maxey's been playing some great ball. I want to see Luka do something special just because of the way he's playing, but I want to pick somebody else because it segues into something else. I have to say, I'm going to say J.J. Varea is going to be our player. I'm going to say we're going to go down 12 in the first, and then Carlisle's going to roll out J.J. J.J.'s going to come off some screens, knock down some balls, swing it to Justin Jackson on the wing. He's going to hit some floaters. So I think JJ is going to be our player to watch. But I wanted to talk about JJ because we know when he hopped into that Warriors game, he hit some threes for us. That was cool to see.
Like,
I love watching JJ.
He hit like four straight threes in like the last like 2 minutes.
Yeah, classic JJ coming in for that. But with that game, that was the 620th game that he played for Dallas. Mm-hmm. And that moved him past Jason Terry for sixth all time in the games played for us, which is says a lot about his character, says a lot about his consistency, his love for the city, his love for the team. But I wanted to talk about that because 627 is the next milestone that Michael Finley set. So that'll be past, I imagine.
Yeah.
And then after that, you got some absolute legends. After that, it's all the guys with their jerseys in the rafters, and then Dirk. So JJ is slowly becoming one of the greatest Mavs of all time, in my opinion.
Oh, I think JJ will definitely get his jersey retired by the Mavs. It's definitely he deserves it to happen. I think Jason Terry is going to get his jersey retired up there too.
For sure. Finley deserves it as well.
I think Finley. I don't think they'll ever put Finley in the rafters, but I think he does deserve it.
Okay, but if they do retire JJ's number, which one do you retire? Because I mean, he was here for longer with number 5, but he won that championship with number 11.
They retire both.
Do a Kobe thing for JJ Varea. I love it.
I think they would just do 11 because that was the championship year, and he put such a big role in that. But, you know, I don't think it would matter to him. But, you know, one more thing I want to say regarding – we can hop into just a little – to end the pod. We're already 45 minutes, so we'll just – I'll keep this short and brief. But if you want to go a quick trade discussion, there have been some trade rumors that came out today by it was reported by Woj that the Mavs and the 76ers are interested in trading for Robert Covington. And I'll let you talk about Robert Covington, because Robert Covington is a good player, but I won't let you talk about it. How would you feel if the Mavs traded, let's say, we use that Golden State second round pick and maybe like a couple bench players to get Robert Covington to the Mavs?
You know, you're right. Robert Covington is a really good player, really solid player. He reminds me a lot of like a Jay Crowder type guy, or, you know, a Jordan guy. And yeah, I think they play the exact same role, and having them both on the same team, I mean, it would be helpful, but we already have a lot of those guys. I mean, Maxey kind of plays a similar role to that. He's a little bigger. Tim, a little smaller, but he sort of plays that same role. We have a lot of those guys around Luka. That's what makes the offense work so well, becoming one of the most efficient in history. So, I mean, adding another guy would help, but at what price? I mean, if we have to give away one of our, you know, strong bench players, like if we have to give away, I mean, even Powell would hurt us so much because he's our only real big. I mean, real big, quote unquote,
Let me propose what we've been talking about in my Mavs group chat for a Covington. They were talking about how they were saying that it's not a high demand, but they were saying the Mavs likely could out trade the 76ers because the Mavs have more pieces. So let's say we do, like, let's say you go Jalen Brunson, second round pick, and Justin Jackson. I think the Mavs would do that in a heartbeat for Robert Covington. But let me
when trade deadline comes around, we see guys like Robert Covington, they start turning into Scottie Pippen. You know, we start thinking they hold a lot more value than they really should when the trade deadline.
I feel like the way Robert Covington fits on the Mavs, this is where it would help. The Mavs need more wings. Like, I really feel like they need a little bit more wing depth, like solid wing depth. So let's say if you get Robert Covington, him and Dodo are very similar, but I think Robert Covington is more of a, he's more of a shooter than Dodo, but Robert Covington is a great defender. So here's what I would propose.
Yeah, I think 38% from three is a good shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, but Robert Covington, and also I think the other reason that Robert Covington would be a good fit is because he's been in the playoffs before. He's had deep runs. He has experience. So here's what I would propose. You get Robert Covington in here. you put him in the starting lineup. So your starting lineup theoretically would be, I would think, it'd be Luka, Rob at the one, Tim Hardaway.
Well, wait, are we trading for him in this scenario? Who are we giving up?
Oh, I said second round pick, Justin Jackson, Jalen Brunson.
Brunson, man, I hate to see him go.
I do, but I feel like we have way too many like point guards, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I guess JJ can just start playing more. Fine by me.
Yeah, and I feel like, and Brunson really hasn't been super amazing this year. And so let's say that you get Covington. So my starters would be, I would say Luka plays the one. He guards usually the worst offensive player on the floor. He usually, right. So Luka, let's say, plays the one. You have Tamari Jr. play the two. You slide in Covington at the three. And so Dodo goes to the bench, which makes your bench depth even more good if you have Dodo come off the bench, because he's proven to be a great rebounder and a great guy for putbacks. So you have Luka, THJ, Tamari Jr., Robert Covington, and then you would start Maxi and KP as your bigs, and I feel like that's a very solid lineup.
I like that a lot, but I feel like Dorian's earned his starting spot. I feel like we can't take that away from him after all he's done this season, after all the steps he's taken. There's no way we can just send him back to the bench just because we traded for another guy. I mean, like, that's not – I don't think we should be doing that to him because he's played incredible. He's taken such a huge thing.
Oh, obviously. I mean, but there it could also be situational-based. Like, you could roll Covington out there for a smaller lineup. You could have him – Dodo, and – you could have Luka, THJ, Dodo, and Covington, and then KP play the five. I really think Covington would just add you to you. First of all, I think you're getting Covington more for his shooting and his defense. And I'm thinking more Covington. I feel like Covington would fit with Luka very well. I feel like Covington's more of a Luka fit because he can sit there and get open. But Covington, I mean, he showed against the Mavs. He can ISO a bit, but that's just one trade that I would think I'd do. But I still think we need to trade for a bona fide center, not Drummond, but maybe like more of a smaller guy, maybe like a. Like a Derek Favors or like a Tristan Thompson, but that's closer to deadline. But yeah, guys, this has been our episode of Courtside Mavs. We should have another pod out around, I don't know, it'll be late tomorrow night after the Portland game. That sound about good, you think? That'll probably be about
that's good to me.
Yeah. So guys, my tomorrow quick Portland pick, I'm gonna say Mavs 117, Portland 112.
I'm gonna say Mavs 113, Portland 108.
Okay, so that's gonna wrap it up for this pod, guys. Make sure you share the pod, please, guys. It helps us so much. Shout out to all the few listeners that we have already. We really appreciate it, guys. And Murphy, you have anything before we sign off?
Yep. Thank you guys for listening to Courtside Mavs. We really appreciate it. And remember, JJ Barea will be the difference maker in the Portland game.
Oh yeah, guys. And remember, we're by the fans, for the fans. See you guys. And welcome to Courtside Mavs, everybody. How is everybody doing? I'm here with my boy Murphy. How are we doing after that nice 2W West Coast mini road trip?
Man, I can tell you one thing, Logan. I am feeling incredible. It's been a while since the Mavs have had a dominant stretch, even though, you know, it's only two games, but it definitely feels nice to win a couple, you know, back-to-back in which we've had struggles recently. So I'm feeling good. I know the Courtside Mavs listeners are feeling good. And we have a lot to unravel with these two games that happened the last two nights.
Oh yeah, we have a lot to break down. We're gonna focus more on the Sacramento game because that's what's on the top of our minds. The Golden State game. I mean, that was pretty much just the Mavs went in there and just kind of kicked their ass, and that was pretty much that. Not much to go into, but Murphy, I want to talk to you. I want to get your thoughts first. What do you think was the most impressive thing out of the Sacramento game for you?
Sacramento game, I'd say the consistency. Because Sacramento, they're a team that has a lot of guys that can get hot quickly and a lot of guys that you feel like shouldn't be killing you, but then they end up killing you. Guys like we've seen Harrison Barnes go off like that many times. We usually see him as a more consistent player, but feels like he always plays a little better against us ever since we traded him. But guys like Buddy Hield, who can catch fire in an instant, or who can also have an incredibly cold game. I feel like those type of guys played pretty well. Buddy hit some threes. Harrison Barnes was scoring pretty well, but the defense that allowed the other guys not to explode. You know, Corey Joseph's another guy that can put up big numbers if allowed. And Bagley, you can tell that he knows where he was drafted, and he knows that other people talk about it all the time. Talk about the impact that he's had on his team compared to what Luke has done for his team so far. You know that's on his mind, and I feel like that's hindering him a little bit in his growth.
Yeah, absolutely. And Buddy Hield is known to be a Mavs killer. I mean, it's always been like that. Whenever we've played Buddy Hield, it's just felt like he always goes for like 40 on us. So I got some stats here from the game that this me talking about Sacramento stats, but if you just read the stats, Dallas did a pretty good job and on defense. Harrison Barnes had 25 points, but he didn't really get any assists or anything. Harrison Barnes shot 43%, so not terrible, but I mean, most of his points was just easy post-ups, but when we needed to get stops, we got stops. De'Aaron Fox had a good game. Fox is a good player.
Fox is a very solid player. Seeing him play like that is nothing out of the ordinary for me.
Yeah.
But what do you think about the Bagley to Luka comparison? Because, you know, when that draft was going on, pretty much everybody, all the media, all the fans are saying the Suns, they got to pick Ayton. You know, they have a gaping hole in their team. They need a big man. Ayton's huge. He's got a body like David Robinson. Right. He can dominate in the NBA. It's a no-brainer that you take him because he was a much safer pick than Luka. Now, the second pick, the Kings, they got a lot of gaping holes. It's not just one position for a team like Sacramento. So choosing a guy like Bagley over a guy like Luka, I mean, Bagley so far this season, now, granted, he's been hurt a little bit. He hasn't played every game. But this season, he's got a total of 7 assists. And Luka had 17 assists that game alone. So that just kind of goes to show you the difference between those two type of guys and how one draft pick can really make all the difference.
I might just
But last night, it was the halfway point of the season. So
yeah,
we look at the numbers, and if you look at pace, which I know you don't really want to look into that because a lot of things can change that, you know, performance and injuries and things of that nature. But if we keep pace the way we are right now, even after the cold stretch we've had recently, we'd be a 52-win team. And 52 wins, you know, compared to the way we've been playing the last few seasons, I mean, it feels great, obviously, but you think of the great Mavs teams in the past, you know, the 67-win team in 2007, teams like that, you say 52 wins, that's solid, but in the tough Western Conference, I don't know. Well, if you think about it, the last time we won 52 games was 2011.
Yes, absolutely. And I think this year for the Mavs is really just about getting experience. Our season this year is more of like, I want it to be kind of like what Denver did last year. I hope it doesn't end the same tragic way the Denver season did, but Denver's last year was the learn how to win development year, and now this year they're doing really good. So I think that's more of the track we're going in. Even in that Sacramento game, one of the things that stood out to me, I mean, we got to talk about Luka's stat line. Only 6 players in NBA history have had 20 points, 15 rebounds, 15 assists. And do you want to take a guess at who those players are? Those 6 players?
Is one of them Magic?
It would be Magic is one of them, yes, correct.
LeBron, I'm going to guess.
LeBron is not one of them.
Interesting. Oscar, I'm going to say.
Oscar had like 20 of them, yes.
He makes. Of course, I think. That's tough.
There's one other player that's done it in like recent years. Two.
Westbrook?
No. The other two that have done it closer to Luka's now the 7th person to do it, but we had Nikola Jokic and Harden have gotten 20 and 15 and 15. Harden shot like had 53 points, 17 assists, 15 rebounds on like a 53% shooting night. And then I think the other one was Magic and now Luka. So that he's in that was just an incredible stat line for Luka. And Luka to me, he has the best field goal percentage when driving into the paint in the whole league. He has the best shooting percentage in the league. It's like 70% in the paint. And Luka's having a little bit of a rough spell on his 3-point shooting. It's not, he hasn't been really good lately. Luka's really a streaky shooter, and I think he'll get better as his career goes on. But I would like just to see him drive more like he did last night, which his 3's not falling, but he can get to the rim so effortlessly, and he draws people in so he can kick it out. And the one thing I was noticing last night is the players were actually making the shots when Luka would hit the players. Yep. for in those passes to the corners or just in general, the guys were making them. And Luke, these are, now I don't expect him to make like as many shots consistently as he did last night, but if they can even do half of what they did last night, Luka could easily average 13, 14 assists a game off of players.
Nah, it feels so good. When he's knocking, and his teammates are knocking down those shots, it feels so good to watch a team like that, watch the offense flow, because when he knows that those guys are going to be knocking down those corner threes and those wing threes, it opens up so many more opportunities, and he's able to make incredible plays like that one full court pass that he made last night when he was on, I believe, the right side of the floor, and he was helping to swing past the Finney Smith in the corner, knock down three in front of the Kings bench. That is allowed to happen because guys like Finney Smith and Kleba, and Hardaway Jr. are knocking down essentially every open three they find.
Yeah, that was one of the best passes I've ever seen. There's only two other players in the league that can make that pass, and that's Ben Simmons and Bron. Those are the only two players I can think of that can make. The way that, because the Luka's height 6'7", the reason he can make these crazy passes because he can see over people, so he can see over the dude. So then he throws like a hook pass, and it drops down to Dorian Finney-Smith like there's like the ball doesn't weigh anything. It flutters there perfectly, perfect touch, and he drains the three. And the one thing that's very underrated about the Mavs is you got to give credit to their developmental team, and they've taken undrafted free agents like Dorian Finney-Smith and Maxey, and they've made them into great players. I mean, imagine it if Maxey was going to be a free agent this year. You know how much money he could get paid by like a team with a lot of cap space. I'm so glad that we paid Maxey last year. He's only making $8 million a year. If Maxey would have had this good of a season and went into free agency this offseason, he would have easily gotten 14, 15.
Oh, for sure. And I see interview after interview where Cuban is just praising the training staff and all the coaches. Sham God in particular, he talks about that man more than anybody, I think. And that goes to show you the kind of people that the Mavs look for. I mean, it's not just players. Like, we don't just worry about finding deep talent in players across the country like we did when we went to Germany to look at Dirk back in the day, or flew out to Slovenia apparently when Luka was 13 to check him out. But it's a talent across the board, you know, with the coaching staff and the trainers. I think Casey Smith might be the best trainer in all of basketball. But the Mavericks just do such an incredible job of finding these talented people across the world. And I think it just goes to show just kind of the nature of the organization and how it's run. I think it's pretty incredible the way Cuban does it.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible how good the training staff is, and I can't praise them enough. I mean, I don't completely give them credit for Dirk, because Dirk was just, he had some godlike healing powers to play through the flu in the finals. He had a bad injury that he probably could have played through in the Spurs, but the team made sure he didn't play that, and he probably could have gotten to the finals that year. But, you know, but Luka seems to be one of those players. He has that just weird ability just to be able to play through injury and play hurt or sick. And there was a thing last night. I said on my Twitter account, but not just me. It was I think All Day Mavs tweeted this and Mavs Highlights tweeted this. Luka had bruises and scrapes all up his arms.
Oh yeah, what was that about?
And it's a shame to me that he hasn't gained. If Harden's gonna get 25 to 30 free throws a game, Luka barely gets half of that and probably gets hit harder than Harden does, and it's ridiculous.
Well, the thing is, you mentioned this earlier that, even with regards to that, Luka's still got the highest field goal percentage in the paint in the entire league. And that's incredible considering the amount of times that he gets hacked and there's no call and he's forced to chunk up some crazy miss and throw his arms in the air. But the fact that he's still able to make them at such a high rate, even when he's getting fouled, I bet there's a lot. You can tell by his reactions, there's a lot of times where he feels like he gets fouled, makes a shot anyways, and there's no whistle.
Oh, yeah, tons of times. And Luka has become... two players I compared to this was a great comparison to Luka is Jamal Crawford. Jamal Crawford was one of the best players ever at getting fouled and making jump shots. Luka just is, I don't know if he's just strong or how he does it. Luka just has an art of getting fouled in the mid-range area and being able to hit those floaters, getting fouled, or even just get fouled and throw up jump shots, and he'll make them.
He did that last night against Sacramento. He had that one from the free throw line
twice. And Luka just has. he stole this move from Chris Paul, because Chris Paul used to do it all the time. Well, he'll come off a screen and he'll get the defender on his back, but instead of going to the basket, he'll get low in a stance and he'll box the guy out behind him, and then he'll just bait him into a foul, or he'll just do it. He basically can either take a floater or make a pass. The defense has to decide what they want to do.
Yep, and a move like that takes so much control. It's amazing that a guy like him at 20 has already mastered a move that took Chris Paul years to work on master.
Yes, and before one thing, I gotta say the Sacramento game. Let's give a big shout out to Dwight Powell. Last two games, 48 for 57 field goal percentage. I mean, we gotta give the only credit I'm gonna give here. I'm gonna give big credit to Mavs Twitter for bullying Dwight Powell into becoming an okay player again.
It worked, guys.
Congratulations. We did the same thing with Tim Hardaway Jr. We bullied Tim Hardaway Jr. into a consistent player. And
now Lucas, next we got to worry about Lucas' free throws now, right? That's what we got to bully him into.
He shot pretty good free throws against Sacramento.
You're right. I think we bullied him enough after the Warriors game.
Yeah. But Dwight Powell, now the criticism for Dwight Powell, it gets a little bit overboard. But like my thing with Dwight Powell is he's good at what he does. He's good at rolling and scoring and dunking. The reason I'm not a fan of Dwight Powell, it's just for the defensive side, because Dwight Powell just gets bullied in the paint, and it's not be entirely Dwight Powell's fault, because the team doesn't really put him in an ideal situation to help him. They play him half the time. They have him guarding the five, which makes no sense, but yeah, it's kind of a thing. But Dwight Powell, the last two games, you got to give credit where credit's due. He's played great, and also Tim Hardaway Jr. has come into his own, and he's been reminding me a lot of Jason Terry. He's coming off these ball screens, and he's hitting these threes now consistently, where earlier in the year he was kind of a streaky shooter, but he seems to be finding his consistency a bit.
Yes, he has. It's nice to see that, and it's especially nice to see. I mean, I saw some tweets today about the three-point percentages across the board from the guys in the Mavs this year compared to last year. I think Tim's up from about 32 to 38%, which is a huge jump. Dorian, I think, had a 4 or 5 point jump as well. And Maxey went from about 35 to 40. And those kind of improvements can really make or break a team. I think people say Porzingis is the reason that this team is so different from last year. And he is, don't get me wrong, but it's guys like that taking the next step that really send the Mavs into contention, hopefully.
Yes. And speaking of Kristaps Porzingis, let's get into a little bit of the KP talk. So earlier in the day, we were hyped up by the Mavs Twitter account and much of the Mavs media, Brad Townsend, Tim Cato. They all said that Porzingis was expected to play. This was like his like goal on this road trip to play. That's what's been determined from like whenever he has soreness. So quick note on the injury. I think this injury, they were very cautious about it. I think they more just said, like, okay, we're going to sit you. You're having a little bit of pain, so we're going to sit you for this amount of games, and we're going to have you come back this time, and we're going to see how you're doing. So KP was set to play tonight. At about 8:40 Central Time, it was tweeted that KP is going to be in the starting lineup. And then Carlisle said KP was going to play. He was going to start. And then around right before the game started, like 10-15 minutes before tip, Tim Cato tweets out Kristaps Porzingis is a late scratch with knee soreness, and everyone was just confused again. And I don't think anyone should be concerned. I think once the Mavs, this is my hunch, but I think once the Mavs saw that Bogdanovich was out for Sacramento, they're like, okay, they don't have their best player, so I don't think KP can maybe rest him for another day. But they said KP after the game did say he was fine, like all these couple days doing these workouts, and they said like he had a little bit of soreness before the game, so they were probably just being, he said, they're being very precautionary. But I'm expecting, I mean, I don't know what to expect at this point, but I would have to assume that KP is probably going to play tomorrow at Portland. So yeah, what are your thoughts on this whole KP injury saga?
You know, if he doesn't play against Portland, that's when, all jokes aside, I am pressing the panic button on him, because this injury came out of nowhere and it's sidelined him for so much longer than anybody could have expected. And the fact that he's been scheduled to come back a couple times and still hasn't come back either of those times, I mean, that worries me a lot. That makes me feel like this was a serious injury initially. They tried to downplay it a little bit and they were going to let him work his way back without really worrying the fans or the media or anybody. But it's taking a turn for the worse. I mean, to be fair, I do think that he really did expect to play yesterday. I read something where he was actually extremely excited and hyped up about the game, getting back out there. and then last minute the soreness returned. He wasn't able to take action, but if he doesn't play the Portland game, I'll be genuinely worried. Yeah,
I think this would be like if this was the playoffs, he would be playing. I think the Mavs are just being very precautionary about this. And to the Mavs' credit, he didn't. I didn't think they needed him to play yesterday. It wasn't like the Sacramento's not a very good team. But I think the Mavs have been doing serviceable without KP. I think he needs to come back. But I don't think the Mavs are in any rush to rush him back. Even if the Mavs went 500 the rest of the way, they would make the playoffs still. So I don't think the Mavs are overly concerned about KP. So I think the Mavs should just take this slow. Make sure he's okay when he comes back and just progress what it is. And the good thing is, I don't think it was any major or freak injury. I just think maybe it was a little bit of wear and tear or something. Maybe he just got, like, he just took a wrong step, and maybe he just had a little bit of pain. You know, it happens.
I believe that's probably what happened, yeah.
My thing was maybe he was on his knee that wasn't injured, maybe he was overcompensating to that knee because of his injury. So...
Very likely. But luckily, we didn't need him for either of these games. We definitely didn't need him for the Warriors game, the Kings game. I thought we might need him for, but somehow pulled it out. But do you want to talk about that Warriors game a little bit?
Oh, yeah. Let's get into a little bit of the Warriors game. So the Warriors game, I thought was, I mean, it was pretty much just a full out just rolling of Golden State, 124-97. Luka really didn't have to play that much. This was a game where Luka didn't have to do too much. I didn't think he barely played. I think he only played about 20-25 minutes. But these are games that if the bench can get back to being consistent like they were towards the beginning of the year, especially during the playoffs, that'll be great for the Mavs. Because if Luka doesn't have to score 30 a game just for us to be close, I mean, that's great. If the bench can have some consistent scoring and doing good, and this was a Boban game. Boban is the definition of efficiency. He had 13 points, 11 rebounds, in about 10 meaningful minutes, and then he played the garbage time minutes. But Boban,
yeah, it's a monster.
Yeah, I feel like Boban, while KP was out, I think they really should have been using him more, just to have him in the paint, just as a presence there. I really think it would have helped a lot. But you know, it is what it is. So hopefully KP comes back in a couple games, and we'll be okay.
Yeah, I even, you know, having Boban out there, a lot of times he's so immobile that it feels like everything's so stagnant when he's out there. But the offense looked incredible, that Warriors game. I'm not sure if it's just because the Warriors are atrocious at defense or what.
Oh, no, the Warriors are atrocious at defense. So are the Kings. The Warriors and the Kings don't play any paint defense. They were just letting us walk in and have whatever we want in the paint. That's why Luka was able to drive so easily. I mean, my one moment from the Warriors game, I got to say, was when Draymond Green was all up in Luka's face. He poked him, and then Luka was just so good on offense that he was able just to drive on Draymond Green, get the little floater, and he kind of taunted Draymond Green. And Luka's doing this to one of the best defenders in the league. So that's really all I was taking from the – that's all I really took from the Warriors game. But, you know, the Mavs –
you know, Draymond's always barking at people, so it was cool to see – I feel like whenever that moment happens and Draymond and Luka have gone at it a few times, I feel like Luka always ends up winning those small little battles. And that's so nice to see because Draymond's such a big trash talker and he loves trying to rile people up and get under their skin. So whenever somebody can humble him a little bit, it makes you feel good, especially when it's a guy like Luka. But I was watching the Warriors broadcast for the game, and Bob Fitzgerald, the Warriors play-by-play guy, he gave a really interesting statistic about Luka. He said, apparently Luka has 12 more and-ones this season than he has total shots blocked for the entire year, which is pretty crazy. The only player in the league with more is the former MVP, Giannis. So that goes to show you the kind of season that Luka's had as well. That's why guys like Draymond can't contain him, even though they're, you know, all NBA defenders and former Defensive Player of the Year guys. It's because Luka is that special.
I would also have to say Luka doesn't block many shots either, but, you know, I'm not going to roast Luka on the defensive end.
Not block shots, like 12 more and ones he has than his own shots have been blocked.
Oh, that's insane.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's why it's so crazy. Yeah, he doesn't block very many shots. I'll give you that. If that's where he thought I was going, then yeah, very impressive stats.
So I'll give you all a quick update of the NBA standings through about halfway through the season right now. Currently, as we're recording this, the Jazz and the Pelicans are in overtime with 55 seconds left. So,
whoa.
Speaking of the Jazz went on a massive win streak and are 28-12, tied for the second seed with Denver. So we have LA Lakers 33-8 with the one seed, Denver 28-12 as the second seed, Jazz tied for the second seed at 28-12. LA Clippers 28-13 as the 4th seed. Houston Rockets 26-14 as the 5th seed. Dallas Mavericks 26-15 as your 6th seed. The Oklahoma City Thunder 23-18. And your Memphis Grizzlies led by Ja Morant 19-22 and holding that last playoff spot. I mean, you got to give credit where credit's due. Ja Morant's having an outstanding season. I think he might sneak into the All-Star game. But
the All-Star game, I don't know. It's pretty stacked in the guard for the Western Conference, man.
It'll be hard, but I mean, he's in the top 10 right now, and I don't think, because half the fan vote is kind of skewed, because Alex Caruso is not going to make it, even though he's like 4 in the fan voting. The coaches have more respect than that. So,
but man, the Utah Jazz, 10 straight games, that is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and
do you think they're legit? Because I mean, I think the Lakers are legit. I think the Nuggets this year are actually legit. And the Clippers, and hopefully the Mavs, but you know, it's not gonna hurt ourselves.
I gotta see consistently run from the Jazz, because there have been times this year where the Jazz have been inconsistent at the beginning of the year, and Mike Conley really wasn't playing that good. But the Jazz have had some easy games recently. This is weird. The Mavs haven't even played the Jazz yet. They will in this 10-game stretch at some point. They play the Jazz on the road. But I mean, I think the reason we haven't played them like any time this year is because last year we played them like 4 times in the first like 30 games. The West is just stacked. I think any team could beat any team in the West. I wouldn't be shocked.
But anyway, no, it's gonna be a good playoff this year, that's for sure. There's gonna be a lot of very interesting matchups. I'm hoping it stays the way it is now, with the Clippers are four and the Lakers are one, so they play each other in the second round. Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah. So some like underrated team could get into the conference finals.
Right.
Now, the bottom of the Western Conference looking like this. At the 9 seed, we have San Antonio at 17-22, Portland at 18-24, Phoenix at 17-24, Minnesota 15-25, New Orleans 15-26, Sacramento 15-26, and at the bottom of the Western Conference, we have the Golden State Warriors at 9-23. Now, let's give you to the Eastern Conference. The Milwaukee Bucks sitting in there at the number 1 seed at 37-6, holding the best record in the NBA right now. Two seed in the East, you got Miami Heat at 28-12. Third seed, we have the Boston Celtics at 27-13. Toronto 26-14 as the 4th seed. The Pacers 26-15 as the 5th seed. The Philadelphia 76ers 26-16 as the 6th seed. Orlando 20-21 as the 7. And Brooklyn 18-12 as your 8th seed. So the 1-6 in the East, that would be Bucks, Heat, Celtics, Raptors, Indiana, 76ers. I think any of those teams could make a run. There's a great shot. I think once Indiana, the Pacers get Victor Oladipo back, I think they have a real shot in the playoffs to upset a couple teams. Philly's been kind of iffy the last couple weeks, but then we go to the bottom of the Eastern Conference. You have your Bulls at 15-27 at your 9th seed, Detroit 15-27, Charlotte 15-29, Washington 13-27, Cleveland 12-29, and New York 11-31. And drumroll please, the worst team in the Eastern Conference, your Atlanta Hawks, led by the All-Star Trae Young, 9-32.
Yeah, we'll talk about the Hawks in a second, because they're atrocious. It's embarrassing to watch. But I'm going to say this about the Eastern Conference contenders, quote-unquote. I don't think the Sixers have any sort of chance. I don't think the Pacers really have a chance. And to be honest, the Heat, I know they're second seed right now, but you got to be a good road team if you're going to win any playoff series. And they have a losing record on the road. I don't think they really have a shot to be very competitive come playoff time. I think the Bucks, they're definitely going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. We'll just see who they face. But that could be their downfall again. I want to see if they can get over that hump this year. I think the Celtics are pretty legit. You know, they've been making great runs the last few years, and they just never really materialized into a finals run. They almost got there that one year when Tatum dunked on LeBron. But I think they've actually got a serious shot to contend for a title this year.
Man,
but
the East is
so that team's just not good enough. They don't have the right pieces fitting together. They have a lot of good pieces, but I mean, a lot of good squares aren't going to fit into round holes, you know.
You know, the East is so weird to me, because I feel like the Bucks, are a lock for the Eastern Conference Finals, depending on who they play. But I wouldn't be shocked if the Bucks got like knocked out by somebody because if they play Toronto again, Toronto could just do the same thing to Giannis last year. They took him away and made him shoot. And Toronto would be a dangerous team for the Bucks again because Toronto knows how to beat them.
I agree.
But I think Toronto's a contender. The Sixers have the talent to definitely make a run. They have a good player. They just got to get together a little bit. And I mean, the East to me is really all about matchups because there's teams that match up well against other teams in the East, and there's teams that like match up really bad against other teams. So, it's kind of weird because, I feel like Milwaukee matches up pretty good with anyone, but I feel like Milwaukee, if they played Toronto, they could have some trouble there. And the East is really going to be about home court advantage. I mean, Miami's been an amazing home team, so if Miami has home court through the first two rounds, I feel like they would probably win the series. But if they had to go on the road more than they played at home, I don't think Miami would win. So, the East is very interesting. But
all about matchups more than anything.
Yeah. The West is a toss-up because the West is just weird. I wouldn't be shocked if the Thunder upset the 2 seed in the first round. It wouldn't shock me.
I can see it for sure. Whoever the Thunder plays in for a run for their money, that's going to be a great series.
And
the Western Conference has so many good teams that I feel like any of those series is going to be a solid one. Even the Grizzlies series, just because there's going to be so much energy and so much hype around those guys.
The Grizzlies are playing good basketball right now, and if the West is, they're just so good, and still the NBA, it's still professional. But I think Denver's going to be a tough team to beat at home in the playoffs. So yeah, but let's shift from the standings talk a little bit. Let's hop into our you want to talk about the Hawks. What did you want to say about the Hawks before we move?
Well, I mean, obviously Trae Young's a great talent. He's going to be starting in the All-Star game, and I'm not sure if that's just for the hype around him or because he's actually solid, but he's putting up Luka-esque numbers this year, almost matching Luka, and Luka's numbers are historically impressive for a second-year guy.
And you feel bad for Trae Young because his team is not good. He does not have a good team whatsoever. That Hawks team is just – it's really just Trae Young and a bunch of yuck.
Yeah, when John Collins went out for that suspension, he hasn't quite been the same, and Jabari Parker stepped up a little bit, but he's Jabari Parker. How long is that really going to last? And that's already kind of faded out. Prayers up to Chandler Parsons, though. I heard he was in a car accident recently, so I hope he's all right for sure. One of my favorite guys. I played for the Mavs, even though it didn't really end that well, but still got much love for the guy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But let's move on for our sort of last little segment of the podcast today. Let's get into previewing the Portland game tomorrow. So why don't you go first on the Portland game? What do you expect tomorrow?
Well, I am really excited for this Portland game because it's been a while since we played Portland and they haven't been considered a powerhouse. I mean, they're still pretty solid. They've been playing not great basketball, but not terrible basketball, but man, I'm a huge Carmelo Anthony fan, so I'm gonna love seeing him versus Luka. They won't guard each other very often, but just the matchup, the hype around that. And every time we play Portland, it always seems to be an incredible game. We've had some insane finishes. We had the Yogi game a few years ago against Portland. This year, the game that came down to the coach's challenge. We've had that game a couple years ago where Dirk hit those back-to-back clutch threes, and we still lost. So every Portland game is just incredible. So this one, I feel like it won't be any different. We had the Luka game last year. I mean, come on now. The buzzer beater.
That's one of the reasons I'm hoping I get to go to the Portland game tomorrow. It's still in the works, but who knows. But that's one of the reasons I wanted to go, because the Portland games are usually really exciting. They're nail-biters. I hope it's not. I'd rather just be a blowout and we just win.
Yeah. I was at the first Portland game this season with the coach's challenge, and Terry Stotts lost us the game. So I hope you have a little better luck than I had.
Yeah. But, Portland, they've been a lot better since they added Carmelo Anthony. They've been playing better. Melo, honestly, he's accepted his role as playing that sort of like starter, but he's not trying to just be Knicks Carmelo Anthony and chuck up 30 shots a game. He's hitting the shots when they ask him to, and he's been pretty good for them. Carmelo's always been a good mid-range guy. He's gonna knock him down most of the time. And
he's playing the exact role that they need.
Portland could easily go on a run and get back into the playoff picture. I would not be shocked. But Portland, the problem this year with Portland, I felt like, is just CJ McCollum hasn't been as consistent as he's been in past years, and you know,
and they lost a lot of their wing depth. You know, they lost a lot of their strong wing defenders and Seth Curry. They lost Aminu. They lost Maurice Harkless as well. A lot of those guys were really big for them, and the reason they were so successful is because Dame and CJ were allowed to do their thing, because the other guys would do their duties on defense and rebounding and make sure that they got the ball and knock down a lot of open shots. So I think replacing those guys for guys like Bazemore and Mario Hezonja has really been hindering them. That's why Melo has helped them out so much, because he's a lot like that in the three aspects, not so much the D aspects, but losing those guys is one of the reasons I think they're lower in the standings than they have been the last few years.
Yeah. And, you know, Portland, I really feel like they're missing Nurkic a lot. He was their presence in the middle. For sure.
Whiteside is very on and off guy.
Yes, and Nurkic was their guy, and Nurkic really just hasn't been there for them to be that presence they need in the middle, and it showed, because Portland's defense this year really hasn't been as stout as it's been in past years. And look at Portland over the last few years. They've been a solid defensive team. They've been in the top 20 in defensive efficiency, and their field goal percentage in the paint last year was a lot, which they would give up field goals in the paint. This year, they've been giving up tons of points in the paint. And if you watch it when the Mavs play Portland this year in the first game, I mean, we would score in the paint at will, and that's really beneficial to the Mavs, because when the Mavs can get those easy buckets, it just makes it easier for everybody.
Hey, we have some breaking news live on the Courtside Mavs show tonight.
Breaking news?
Well, not breaking, but we talked about it a little bit earlier about the Jazz game. Brandon Ingram, career high 49 to end the Jazz's 10-game winning streak. How about that, huh?
Wow.
49 for Ingram, man. He is blossoming into something special.
He deserves to be an All-Star this year.
You think he's going to get it, though? There's a lot of players in the West.
I think he could squeak into one of the last spots. I think he deserves
it. He's definitely in the most improved conversation, that's for sure. I'm not so sure about
it. He'll definitely probably win MIP, without a doubt in my mind. I think he's the most improved player.
Luka has a chance as well in that category.
I think Luka is too good to win most improved player, because he'll probably be in the MVP voting.
Yeah, he is.
But you know, it's right. I think the Mavs are probably gonna. I don't know. Portland games are weird, but I hope KP plays. If KP doesn't play, you know, Portland's still a good enough team to score. I mean, the thing with the Mavs, I always say, is the Mavs they're good enough to blow good teams out, but they're also good enough to where they'll let a bad team beat them, or they can just play bad. And if Portland, without KP right now and without somebody in the paint, Portland could score in the paint at will sometimes if they want to. If we let them, so you know.
They did that a little bit the earlier game this season that we played them in Dallas. They did a lot of, you know, quick dives to the paint, and once those started to get open, then Dame really found himself getting a lot of easy layups.
Yeah, my player to watch for the Portland game, we can choose a player. I'm going to go with Maxey. Maxey's been playing really good over this stretch of five or six games in KP's absence, and Maxey's three-point shot has just been on point the last few games. He is doing it. He is saying, call me. After those threes, and Maxey's been on fire, so I think Maxey's going to have a good game, and he's my player to watch. So who's your player to watch for the Portland game?
You know, I hope it's Maxey, because Maxey's been playing some great ball. I want to see Luka do something special just because of the way he's playing, but I want to pick somebody else because it segues into something else I have to say. I'm going to say J.J. Varea is going to be our player. I'm going to say we're going to go down 12 in the first, and then Carlisle's going to roll out J.J. J.J.'s going to come off some screens, knock down some balls, swing it to Justin Jackson on the wing. He's going to hit some floaters. So I think JJ is going to be our player to watch. But I wanted to talk about JJ because we know when he hopped into that Warriors game, he hit some threes for us. That was cool to see.
Like,
I love watching JJ.
He had like four straight threes in like the last like 2 minutes.
Yeah, classic JJ coming in for that. But with that game, that was the 620th game that he played for Dallas. Mm-hmm. And that moved him past Jason Terry for sixth all-time in the games played for us, which is says a lot about his character, says a lot about his consistency, his love for the city, his love for the team. But I wanted to talk about that because 627 is the next milestone that Michael Finley set. So that'll be past this, I imagine.
Yeah.
And then after that, you got some absolute legends. After that, it's all the guys with their jerseys in the rafters, and then Dirk. So JJ is slowly becoming one of the greatest Mavs of all time, in my opinion.
Oh, I think JJ will definitely get his jersey retired by the Mavs. It's definitely he deserves it to happen. I think Jason Terry is going to get his jersey retired up there too.
For sure. Finley deserves it as well.
I think I don't think they'll ever put Finley in the Raptors, but I think he does deserve it.
Okay, but if they do retire JJ's number, which one do you retire? Because I mean, he was here for longer with number 5, but he won that championship with number 11.
They retire both.
Do a Kobe thing for JJ Barea. I love it.
I think they would just do 11 because that was the championship year, and he put such a big role in that. But you know, I don't think it would matter to him. But you know, one more thing I want to say regarding, we can hop into just a little to end the pod. We're already 45 minutes, so I'll keep this short and brief. But if you want to go a quick trade discussion, there have been some trade rumors that came out today by it was reported by Woj that the Mavs and the 76ers are interested in trading for Robert Covington. And I'll let you talk about Robert Covington, because Robert Covington is a good player, but I won't let you talk about it. How would you feel if the Mavs traded, let's say, we use that Golden State second round pick and maybe like a couple bench players to get Robert Covington to the Mavs?
You know, you're right. Robert Covington is a really good player, really solid player. He reminds me a lot of like a Jay Crowder type guy, or, you know, a Jordan guy. And yeah, I think they play the exact same role, and having them both on the same team, I mean, it would be helpful, but we already have a lot of those guys. I mean, Maxey kind of plays a similar role to that. He's a little bigger. Tim, a little smaller, but he sort of plays that same role. We have a lot of those guys around Luka. That's what makes the offense work so well, becoming one of the most efficient in history. So, I mean, adding another guy would help, but at what price? I mean, if we have to give away one of our, you know, strong bench players, like if we have to give away, I mean, even Powell would hurt us so much because he is our only, he's the only real big, I mean, real big, quote unquote, because we know how.
Let me propose what we've been talking about in my Mavs group chat for a Covington. They were talking about how they were saying that it's not a high demand, but they were saying the Mavs likely could out trade the 76ers because the Mavs have more pieces. So let's say we do, like, let's say you go Jalen Brunson, second round pick, and Justin Jackson. I think the Mavs would do that in a heartbeat for Robert Covington. But let me
when trade deadline comes around, we see guys like Robert Covington, they start turning into Scottie Pippen. You know, we start thinking they hold a lot more value than they really should when trade deadline.
I feel like the way Robert Covington fits on the Mavs, this is where it would help. The Mavs need more wings. Like, I really feel like they need a little bit more wing depth, like solid wing depth. So let's say if you get Robert Covington, that would, him and Dodo are very similar, but I think Robert Covington is more of a, he's more of a shooter than Dodo, but Robert Covington is a great defender. So here's what I would propose.
Yeah, I'd say 38% from three is a good shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, but Robert Covington, and also I think the other reason that Robert Covington would be a good fit is because he's been in the playoffs before. He's had deep runs. He has experience. So here's what I would propose. You get Robert Covington in here. You put him in the starting lineup. So your starting lineup theoretically would be, I would think, it'd be Luka, Rob at the one, Tim Hardaway.
Well, wait, are we trading for him in this scenario? Who are we giving up?
Oh, I said second round pick, Justin Jackson, Jalen Brunson.
Brunson, man, I hate to see him go.
I do, but I feel like we have way too many like point guards, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I guess JJ can just start playing more, fine by me.
Yeah, and I feel like, and Brunson really hasn't been super amazing this year. And so let's say that you get Covington in. So my starters would be, I would say Luka plays the one. He guards usually the worst offensive player on the floor. He usually, right. So Luka, let's say, plays the one. You have Tim Hardaway Jr. play the two. You slide in Covington at the three. And so Dodo goes to the bench, which makes your bench depth even more good if you have Dodo come off the bench, because he's proven to be a great rebounder and a great guy for putbacks. So you have Luka, THJ, Tim Hardaway Jr., Robert Covington, and then you would start Maxey and KP as your bigs, and I feel like that's a very solid lineup.
I like that. I like that a lot, but I feel like Dorian's earned his starting spot. I feel like we can't take that away from him after all he's done this season, after all the steps he's taken. There's no way we can just send him back to the bench just because we traded for another guy. I mean, that's not – I don't think we should be doing that to him because he's played incredible. He's taken such a huge thing.
Oh, obviously. I mean, but there it could also be situational-based. Like, you could roll Covington out there for a smaller lineup. You could have him – Dodo, and you could have Luka, THJ, Dodo, and Covington, and then KP play the five. I really think Covington would just add you to you would ha- first of all, I think you're getting Covington more for his shooting and his defense. And I'm thinking more Covington. I feel like Covington would fit with Luka very well. I feel like Covington's more of a Luka fit because he can sit there and get open. But Covington, I mean, he showed against the Mavs. He can ISO a bit, but that's just one trade that I would think I'd do. But I still think we need to trade for a bona fide center, not Drummond, but maybe like more of a smaller guy, maybe like a Derek Favors or like a Tristan Thompson. But that's closer to deadline. But yeah, guys, this has been our episode of Courtside Mavs. We should have another pod out around, I don't know, it'll be late tomorrow night after the Portland game. That sound about good, you think? That'll probably be about.
That's perfect to me.
Yeah. So guys, my tomorrow quick Portland pick, I'm gonna say Mavs 117, Portland 112.
I'm gonna say Mavs 113, Portland 108.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it up for this pod, guys. Make sure you share the pod. Please, guys, it helps us so much. Shout out to all the few listeners that we have already. We really appreciate it, guys. And Murphy, you have anything before we sign off?
Yep, thank you guys for listening to Courtside Mavs. We really appreciate it. And remember, JJ Barea will be the difference maker in the Portland game.
Oh, yeah, guys. And remember, we're by the fans, for the fans. See you, guys.